podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Security Now is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting.
This is Security Now with Steve Gibson, episode 69 for December 7th, 2006. Internet Anonymity, Part 1. Well, after that marathon edition last week of Security Now, almost an hour and a half.
It was 97 minutes.
I'm exhausted. But, I should say, Steve Gibson is here, and he's our security guru. And people loved it.
They really did. I got some positive feedback in our Security Now news group at GRC from people saying, I had one comment. Someone said they thought it might have been the best Security Now ever.
Wow.
And they liked the fact that we took our time. We thoroughly covered the topics. I think more by coincidence than anything else, we had a really good selection of questions. You know, they were complimenting me on the questions, but it's like, well, okay, I didn't really do anything different this time than I have before. I just read through a bunch of questions and found good ones. But, you know, I guess we just hit the sweet spot somehow.
So. I like the Q&As because of the variety. You know, it's not just one topic. And it's often the questions, and I think this was the case last time, are ones that I myself go, I wonder. And so it's good. You know, that's why I do call-in talk shows and call-in TV shows, because I think people ask the questions. Sometimes we, as experts, don't always ask the right questions. We know too much, maybe.
Yep. Well, and of course, doing that really keeps you on your toes, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because, as I listen to you on KFI, I'm thinking, my God, this guy knows so much. The breadth of your knowledge is phenomenal.
And that it is. It's good training for that. You know, I'm probably leaving that KFI show at the end of the month because I've been working 7 days a week for 3 years, and it's finally taken its toll. My hair is falling out.
Your family's forgot. Well, I think that was
the family.
The birthday you may have recently had might be responsible for some of that hair loss too.
Yeah. And it's hard to choose any one of the many projects I have to let go. But because the radio show consumes both Saturday and Sunday, it really eats my weekends. I think that's probably the one that's going to go. So. Yeah. That's the thing that it will suffer is that forced training every week on 20 or 30 topics is great. I mean, it keeps my mind going.
Right.
If I seem dumber next year, you'll know why. So this week we're going to talk about something I think it's very important, Internet anonymity.
Yeah, there's been a lot of interest from people posting on their own questions on the Security Now page at GRC. For example, people want to have a presentation about this network called Tor, which stands for the Onion Router, which is an anonymity-enhancing network. And so I've begun to do a lot of research onto the specifics of that so we could talk about it. But in getting involved in this, I realized that there's a social issue. I mean, like a moral and ethical issue that sort of comes up when you talk about, when you talk about any powerful technology and the internet and the anonymity that it provides is a powerful technology. You know, I mean, famously, Einstein was very concerned about the uses to which his contribution to the development of the atom bomb would be put. And I think, as I remember, later in life, he became really sort of a peace nut, really worried that this armament he had created was, was so powerful and so potentially susceptible to misuse and abuse that he partially regretted his role in that.
Well, it's always, a mixed bag. I think if you accept the notion that there are times when anonymity is important, if you're a whistleblower, if you are in a repressive regime and you need to fight against it, there are lots of reasons that anonymity would be important. I had this conversation with Phil Zimmerman, the guy who created PGP, and
Right.
And that's what he says. He says, you know, you, unfortunately, you don't get to choose. You either have allow anonymity or not. And there are pluses and minuses to both, I guess.
Well, I mean, for example, it's certainly arguable that you cannot have free speech without anonymity, because people will simply be intimidated, exactly, and less willing to speak freely if they know that there are consequences to what they could say. I mean, I have to say, Leo, I have been self-conscious sending some political email, you know, like post 9/11, knowing that the United States government has
right.
become much more aggressive about, you know, scanning email. I mean, when I use hot terms and keywords and things, I find myself thinking, I mean, literally, my behavior is modified because I don't want a false positive. I mean, I'm no terrorist. I'm a patriot and all that. But still, it's just like, you know, you just get a little twitchy when you think that, you know, what you're saying could be triggering some automated system somewhere.
That's why I use PGP. One of these days, we're going to get you using it, because that's the point. But it also raises the specter of terrorists themselves using encryption.
Well, yes. And in fact, you know, sort of on the issue of the benefit of it, you know, GRC maintains newsgroups, and we don't require anyone to authenticate themselves in any way. So, you know, most of the people there use handles, you know, typical internet handles, some random, you know, combination of words and letters and things that identify them, and that's the only way they're identified. Now, we implemented the technology to essentially create a hash of their login, which is not in any way associated to their name or any other information, but it's a unique token which cannot be spoofed. And so the idea is that posters at GRC have a handle which is anonymous, but they also have a tag which every posting they make is stamped with that tag, which is just, I mean, it's the result of a cryptographic hash. And what it means is that nobody is able to impersonate
right.
somebody else, even though everyone is able to remain anonymous. And actually, the other cool thing is that this allows people to securely delete their own postings if something happens and they regret what they posted, they were, you know, upset at the time. You know, it's been a traditional problem with news groups is that you either could not delete or anyone could delete, in which case you have, you know, specious deleters who are deleting other people's postings. So we didn't want that, but we also wanted people to be able to, you know, amend their own postings. And so this allows them to do that. But the point is that I'm really an advocate of allowing people to be anonymous if that's what they want, because I think it gets the truth. I really think people feel much more free to say what they really think if they're anonymous.
Right.
Now, even in my own little microcosm, speaking about this just for a minute, I mean, there has been a downside to that. Back when I was being very vocal about raw sockets on Windows XP, you know, and created a huge furor in the industry, the news groups drew a lot of attention from what you could only call trolls. I mean, people who were trolling the
awful.
Group.
Who, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it was really awful. Now, I refused to delete those postings. I mean, it's my server, my bandwidth, my storage, you know, and people there were saying, Steve, why are you allowing these people to badmouth you like this and just leave this content on the server? And my feeling was, well, that's their opinion, and, you know, who am I to say that they don't have as much right to post something negative about, you know, Steve Gibson and GRC as somebody else has to post something positive?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I ended up being vindicated in that issue with Microsoft, of course, and raw sockets, which are now removed from XP after Service Pack 2. But, I mean, it was a rough time. And, I mean, it was about me sticking to the principle that, you know, people could post whatever they wanted to and do so anonymously. Arguably, if these people had to be identified, then they would probably not have posted that way. I mean, one of the things that we see on the internet is much more outrageous behavior than you normally see in the physical world, where people are inherently more accountable for their actions.
Oh, yeah. Buggy Bear 2937 is very easily annoyed and lets
right.
us all know it. I'm making that up, of course. But,
oh, of course.
But that's the real problem, is that it doesn't feel like a face-to-face. You are somewhat anonymous. And, you know, and on sites where people use real names, you don't see that kind of problem.
Right.
So
right.
It's just tough because, I mean, there are pros and cons to both sides.
Well, I have to say, too, that if somebody uses an anonymous handle over time and we have the ability to prevent that from being spoofed, as we do, what ends up developing over time is a trust in that person.
That's true. In that
anonymous handle. That is, I'll never know who many of the valued contributors on our news groups are.
But they have identity. They've built an identity, even though it doesn't match their real name.
Exactly.
That you know. Now, and that's the why, and maybe this is the answer. That's why a lot of message boards have an ignore feature. So if, conversely, somebody proves their identity to be a complete butthead, you just press the ignore button and you don't see their stuff anymore. Maybe that's the kind of solution we need. Instead of saying, no, you've got to use your real name, we need maybe to do it some other way, more innovatively.
Well, and of course, in the press, there's this whole notion, and even in law enforcement, there's this notion of an anonymous informant. I mean, you know, the famous Deep Throat who was participating in the whole Watergate issue and informing Bob Woodward of what was going on. I mean, this was a person who, over time, built up a relationship with this person in the press. And so, you know, and the same thing, of course, happens in law enforcement, where somebody will have a confidential informant that has over time has proven their integrity, may always need, for whatever reason, to remain anonymous, but feels that by providing certain information, more better is being done than harm. And, you know, that's sort of the way, you know, that decision gets made. So, you know, the other thing that's interesting is there's, for example, a network called Freenet, which is really the perfect example of very powerful technology where you're taking the good with the bad. Freenet allows the creation of private encrypted networks for storage of content. Now, and that's something very different, for example, than other anonymizing services like, you know, the famous anonymizer.com that's right. been around for a decade. They will allow you to anonymously acquire information. That is, for example, anonymously surfing the internet so that you go to sites and they have no idea who you are. Now, as we're going to discuss next week, it turns out that unless this is done with much more greater care than most people assume, that level of anonymity can be penetrated. So it turns out that really true anonymity on the net is much harder to get than is normally believed. But Freenet is a different approach. They're, you know, very pro anonymity, pro privacy, pro free speech. So their system basically allocates a chunk of hard drive space from everyone participating in the network, and the content of Freenet is encrypted and stored in this big distributed database made up of all these different computers. Well, it's valuable, certainly, for people to be able to post and share their own content, whereas, for example, as I said, with Anonymizer, you're only browsing websites, and they specifically don't allow you to create content. In Freenet, you can. But, I mean, it does mean that as a participant in this network, you have no idea how your hard drive is being used. I mean, it could literally be, you know, sure, it could be uplifting free speech articles about, you know, what's really going on with a government or actions somewhere in the world, But it, at the same time, it could be, you know, really distasteful, you know, child pornography or something. I mean, and the point is, you are enabling that to be stored on your computer by availing yourself of this system. So, you know, I mean, it's a real mixed bag. And, you know, the other issue is one of copyright. And it's really it's interesting how copyright comes into this, because the enforcement of copyright, that is the actual enforcement of it, requires monitoring communications. You know, that's how copyright is enforced, is through monitoring communication. But free speech, as we've said, cannot be guaranteed in an environment where there is monitored communications. So, I mean, just logically, that demonstrates that you cannot simultaneously have both freedom of speech and the enforcement of copyright.
Hmm.
Because
you're right. QED.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so you know, many people have said, well, what if like Freenet is used for sharing of copyrighted movies and files and music and content? And it's like, well, yes, you know, that's a violation of copyright law. And so it's against the law for the system to be used in that way. But a system which robustly enforces freedom of speech, and we've already seen that freedom of speech requires anonymity, otherwise speech is really not unencumbered and not free. So you're going to have anonymity, and inherently that means that the anonymity creates free speech, and free speech means that copyright cannot be enforced.
Yep.
So I guess the real point I wanted to make was that we're talking about potentially very powerful technologies which can be abused. I mean, as you were saying earlier, Leo, there is, for example, an issue with terrorists using networks like this to securely communicate among themselves. I mean, it's absolutely possible.
Right.
I mean, at the same...
Of course, when you're just encrypting the email, you can still tell who's sending a message to whom, right?
So, for example, with PGP, there is the knowledge that we've got endpoints that are communicating. And one of the differences with a system like Freenet, which is a rich network of interconnected systems which are encrypted, is that there isn't any way to demonstrate a point-to-point connection. Data can be deposited in this distributed shared database, and it can be retrieved.
So if I use PGP to encrypt email to you, everybody knows, who's snooping on us anyway, that you and I are having a conversation.
Exactly.
If I were to do it over Freenet, nobody know who I was talking to.
Exactly. And in fact, Freenet, I think it's currently at 0.7 is the current release. They have just added some technology to allow standard internet-style bulletin board communications where people are able to have, you know, threaded discussions with complete assured anonymity and an inherent database, which is what any kind of a discussion board requires, and an absolute encryption and no ability to trace who sees what.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how Freenet works?
I'm going to get into the technology of this stuff next week because
okay.
it is complicated. And I mean, because it turns out that, you know, for example, anonymizer that is basically essentially just a proxy. Anonymizer any simple anonymizing proxy has the problem that if communications is monitored upstream and downstream of it, that is on either side of it, it's possible to associate the traffic pattern coming and going and determine the IP of someone visiting a given website. And that's something that people don't typically appreciate.
Right.
The idea being that, you know, packet sizes vary, packet timing varies. And so if somebody, for example, the government, had the ability of monitoring the network traffic to and from Anonymizer, they would be able to see packets coming in to Anonymizer and leaving, and basically penetrate that anonymizing proxy effect because the traffic would allow them to associate connections through the proxy and basically punch a hole in the entire thing. So it turns out that obtaining, you know, this level of real anonymity is substantially more difficult than most people assume. It's just not a matter of running through a proxy which is going to reissue your HTTP communications from its IP rather than from yours. In fact, the Tor project says, Tor only minimally hides such correlations between incoming and outgoing traffic.
Interesting.
It says even Tor, which is a multi-hop, you know, multi-layered system, it says an attacker watching patterns of traffic at the initiator and at the responder will be able to confirm the correspondence with high probability.
The correspondence between you and me, let's say.
Well, yes. For example, if we were connecting through there, but normally Tor is used, for example, for robust anonymous surfing. Uh-huh. It turns out, though, that it is not that robust.
Ain't so anonymous either, apparently.
Well, exactly. And that's the problem is they had to, and they deliberately, I mean, they understand the problem. The only way to really enhance this is to introduce much greater latency. That is for the routers in the Tor network to hold the packets for a long period of time and then release them. Well, now, this is the kind of thing that you could do, for example, if you wanted to anonymously download files where you're not trying to do real-time activities. But things like VOIP obviously require real-time responses. And, you know, to practically surf the web, to go from website to website, clicking on links and downloading content, there's a tremendous amount of real-time interaction between your browser and the remote server as all of the various components of a web page are assembled. So this notion of real-time anonymity turns out to be specious. It is almost impossible to get that. One way you can is if the anonymizer also is a big cache. Because if it's caching, then many of the things you need, the assets and resources and even the pages you go to, may already be in the cache. So, you know, for example, people who use Google are probably aware that sometimes you'll click on a link in Google and that is a link that Google has returned as a result of a search. And, you know, the site will be down or offline or really slow, and you go, okay. So you hit stop on your browser, and instead you use Google's cached copy. So in that scenario, you're never making your request outside of Google. It's going to Google, and we're taking advantage of Google's massive cache of the entire Internet in order to prevent actually going out to that server and getting the content. So there's an example where no one could detect, if they weren't looking inside Google, no one could detect from the outside over, for example, an HTTPS, that is an SSL secured connection to Google's cache, what it was you were looking at, because Google would be the central repository of all these external sites. But that's exactly analogous to what Freenet does. Because Freenet creates this encrypted, secured database of discussion groups and massive amounts of content, which is completely opaque from the outside, and due to the way it's set up, no one is able to determine what it is you're putting into this database and what it is you're pulling out.
So we don't want to get into details on how this works.
I want to do that next week because it's really interesting what the Tor guys did in order to create, you know, really robust security with their network.
So there's Freenet, there's Tor, and then, of course, there's local encryption, which doesn't eliminate the locale of where it's coming from or where it's going, but at least encrypts the content like PGP or the new privacy guard, GPG, which I use.
Right, but I guess I'm glad you brought that up because the point is, what's significant about that is that it's not anonymous.
Right. In the sense that you know who it is, yes, right.
Exactly. The content may be opaque and securely encrypted, but there's no anonymity provided by the people who are communicating at the endpoint.
Right.
And very often that's something that people really need or want for various purposes. And again, the problem is there are many, many, many good reasons and beneficial reasons for having and enforcing and allowing anonymity on the net. The flip side is, as with any really powerful technology, it can be used for nefarious purposes as well.
There were for many years, and I don't know if they're still around, anonymous remailers where you would use a kind of similar to a Tor or anonymizer. You'd use multi proxies, and it would eventually hide who they sent the email and where it was going. Unfortunately, I have to say, at least some of these have been subpoenaed by governmental agencies. And I guess it wasn't hidden enough.
In fact, there was a case. There's something called the Java Anonymous Proxy Project, which spreads anonymous proxies around the globe. It turns out that the state of Germany did not want these anonymous proxies functioning within their domain. Their dominion, and generated legal action against these anonymizers. They legally required that a back door be installed in order for them to have access to what was going on. I mean, this kind of anonymity makes governments very uncomfortable.
And others, like the Church of Scientology, who compromised the Pennant mailer. Well, it's a fascinating subject, and we've just started, basically, as you have in the past, with kind of a roundup of the high-level issues. We'll talk about the technologies in the next episode.
Yeah, we could have ignored the whole question of the value and benefit and importance and responsibility that comes with anonymity on the Internet, because it's very significant, because the Internet is such a powerful opportunity for giving people the freedom of speech and freedom of anonymity, but with that comes, you know, some responsibility, and there's a dark side, which I didn't want to not
you can't
talk
ignore
about
it.
That.
Although I am certainly a believer in ultimately in free speech, and
yes,
and I think you've got to do it, despite the negatives, the downside, the alternative of completely no anonymity at all is far worse.
Well, and it seems to be, I don't mean to impose, democratic politics on the world, certainly.
Lowercase d, by the way, not uppercase D when you say
right,
democratic.
Exactly, lowercase d.
Right.
I mean, certainly the rulers of China have a different philosophy about the way they think a state should operate. But to the degree that a democracy is a valuable thing for people to have, we understand that requires that the citizens of the democracy be informed of what the government is doing, and that there be good communications in order for this state to be managed. And governments have historically fought that kind of really good communication. Governments would like to have more control, and it's the lack of control that makes the system work, in the long term.
Steve, sometimes technology verges on politics, and this is a case where it does, and I think you've done a great job of synopsizing both sides. Next week, the ins and outs, the technology behind Freenet.
And why anonymity? Why and exactly how technically obtaining real anonymity is a much more difficult thing to do on the net than most people are aware.
It's hard to do. Thank you, Steve Gibson. Of course, we want to remind everybody that Steve's site is the home not only to this podcast, GRC.com, and the 16 kilobit versions and the transcripts, but also to SpinRite, which is his daily bread. And, if you ever have trouble with your hard drive, there's no question at all. SpinRite is a must. It's in my kit when I go around and work on people's computers. It's one of the first programs I'll run. It's the ultimate disk recovery and maintenance utility, and it's highly recommended.
I got a neat piece of mail from someone who recently purchased a Dell Latitude notebook. He said, "I purchased a brand new Dell Latitude notebook a couple of weeks ago. I was very happy with the Core Duo gig of RAM machine." He said, excuse me. He said it started to boot very slowly, and programs would crash every so often. So I ran SpinRite, and what do you know? It started finding problems about halfway through the scan. So I emailed Dell and told them that SpinRite was used on the drive and that I would require a new one. With no questions asked, they sent out a brand new hard drive the next day with prepaid return shipping.
That's great.
He said the respect from Dell to the SpinRite product was phenomenal. They didn't even want me to run any other software to confirm the diagnosis.
They knew.
He said, thanks, Steve. You saved a brand new Dell from an untimely death.
Isn't that great?
That was really neat. And, of course, you know, Dell can't control what, you know, how the UPS driver may have been drop-kicking this guy's poor laptop.
Well, don't even blame UPS. Sometimes the hard drives just come out of the factory bad. I mean, that's not...
Exactly. It could pass initial tests and just have an infant mortality problem.
Right.
But you know, this guy ran SpinRite. It confirmed a problem, and the Dell said, okay, that's all we need to know.
I love it.
So next week is talking about the technical challenges of Internet anonymity. I did mention last week that I would have a new piece of security-oriented freeware to announce. Unfortunately, we're recording this and next episode early. Yes, and I've gotten myself tangled up in some tricky details with it. It's going to end up being, I think, even cooler and more valuable than I originally expected, but it's also turning out to be a lot more challenging. So I'm going to delay the announcement until I actually have the thing running and bulletproof and tested. So it'll be a couple of weeks, and then we'll talk about what that is.
No problem at all. You're in heaven, though, aren't you, when you get to code on a new project?
Oh, finally, Leo. I'm back to writing some code.
Does that make you feel good? That's neat. I can tell. Are you writing this in assembler?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, Steve.
Yep.
You're so old-fashioned.
That's my language.
I love it.
It turns out that it's exactly the right language for this application because I'm dealing with, you know, down in the registers of Intel processors.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and, you know, dealing with literally setting bits on and off and protected mode and privilege instructions and all that kind of stuff. So
will this work on Vista as well as XP?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. How do you know that?
Did you test it in Vista?
Yeah, I've got it running on Vista. In fact, I have a new MacBook with the Intel Core 2 Duo. Because I needed some more recent chips in order to see it running there. And Leo, I got to tell you, I'm going to disabuse you of this notion that Vista requires a lot of power. I mean, I am really happily running it on my little HP TC1100 notebook. I mean, my
is low power. That's the old tablet. Yeah, that's not very fancy. I mean,
well, now the 1000 was a Transmeta, and they realized, whoops, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
And so they went to the 1100, which is a Pentium M. I think it's 1.2 gigahertz or something. But I mean, it is completely usable.
That's good news.
And I'll tell you, I don't have the I'm never going to remember the name of this UI. The glass.
Aero glass.
Aero glass. I don't have that.
You don't need that.
I really don't need it. And, Leo, there are so many little touches that there is now, like, stroke recognition on the tablet. So you're able to, like, scroll. You're able to scroll the browser page just by stroking up or down. You're able to copy, paste, cut, and delete stylus strokes. Anyway, I'm seriously considering maybe just skipping over XP and going to Vista because I really think
you should.
This is, you know, you and Paul were talking on Windows Weekly on Friday saying that, you know, in his opinion, because he's of course been really exposed to it, he thinks it's like Microsoft really got it right.
I'm totally excited about it.
Yeah, and here I am saying, you know, Mr. Skeptic, touch it for a couple years, blah blah blah. It's like, well, there's a lot to like about it.
In fact, I have to say on this M1210, it's running XP because I haven't yet got my MSDN subscription in it. And I don't even want to try it. I know XP. I'm not interested. I want Vista. I want Vista. And I'm sure everybody else is saying the same thing. So, all right. Well, we're just going to say goodbye and see you next week. And thank you, Steve.
I don't.
All right. And we'll see you all back here, same time, same place, for Security Now.
Security Now.